Hello and welcome to What the Fork, an audio interview series where you'll discover a practical and nourishing plan to feed yourself for health and happiness. I'm your host, Sherry Clark. Over the course of this series, you'll meet dozens of experts who will give you insights into how to uplevel your own life into terms of both health and happiness. You'll get practical, workable information you can put to use right away. So let's get started with today's special guest. I've mentioned before in this series that one of my favorite things to do is research and kind of curate the experts before I invite them to join us. Today we will be hearing from Cassandra Gaisford from New Zealand. And I already had one of her books, and the title of it is called, and you'll really like this, listeners, it's called Midlife Career Rescue, How to Confidently Leave a Job You Hate and Start Living a Life You Love Before It's Too Late. I mean, who doesn't that speak to, right? Even sometimes when you're an entrepreneur like me. I love that she suggests making what she calls a dream board for inspiration to help you manifest the next thing in your life, because I recommend something very similar, and I call mine a vision board. But then I discovered the book was actually part of a trilogy and that she also had written another series on passion and purpose, and I went from impressed to smitten. I had to have her on to here today. So Cassandra and I had an impromptu conversation when I asked her to be the guest here, and I love that she embodies the presence and the concept of passion. It really just oozes out of her. You'll see what I mean firsthand in just a moment. But know that she's more than a cheerleader or a motivator. She balances her palpable zeal and practical advice and tips. And when she's done talking, I bet you'll feel compelled to jump up and get on with your life. So, Cassandra, welcome.
Gosh, thank you so much. What a really lovely introduction. I'm very flattered, Terry.
Oh, you're so welcome. And you have already lived up to it in my eyes. So let's get you acquainted with our listeners. If we could begin with your story, how is it that you've come to this place?
I think it's really interesting that when I reflect back, I came to this place of passion through anger. And I think that surprises people. I got really, really angry one time. I was working in a workplace, and this manager that I had to report to, he was a real bully. And one time I was working as a recruitment person, and I was, and anyone listening who's dealt with recruitment people, they can be fantastic or they can be a real source of angst. And I wanted to know if my candidate was going to get an interview. People want to know, am I going to get an interview? Am I going to get a shot at a job? And he said to me, if you ask me one more time, and you'll have to excuse my language because I'm just being factual, He said, if you ask me one more time, I'm going to smash your fucking head in.
Whoa. Yeah.
And this was really interesting because it was in a big global international company, obviously global. It was in an open plan environment. Everybody could hear the way he talked to me, and nobody said anything. They all just went dead quiet. And I used to be quite shy and meek, and I didn't like to rock the boat. And it was at that point I really found my voice. And I remember saying to him, I know you're in a bad mood, but I'm going to ask you one more time, is my candidate getting an interview?
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow. Well, that'll prompt it. So is that what made you want to leave that environment and strike out on your own?
It was partially that, in the fact that the environment was very sales-focused, and a lot of the time people were putting more energy into talking people into taking jobs that they knew weren't really good fit for those people than they were in helping them really discover what they really wanted to do, you know, what made their soul sing. And then I realized I wanted to be the person that helped somebody believe in their dreams. I wanted to be the person that helped them find a job that made them happy. And alongside working with that manager, who obviously wasn't a good fit for me, I decided, well, right across the hallway was another division of the company, and they helped people who had been made redundant find work again. And that I I guess, and also because at the time I was more in a sales role, I had to find the work that other consultants delivered. I remember sitting in on a session that a career consultant was having with somebody, and I realized with horror, they never actually sat down with a person and asked them what were they interested in. And you'd get people coming through and they're traumatized from their work experience. They were unhappy, they were depressed, some people were suicidal. And I thought, gosh, you're missing the fact. What if you could help them find joy again? What if it was as simple as helping them remember what inspired them, what they were fascinated by, what was their deepest passion or purpose? And I know many people, when they're sort of feeling stuck without a job or stressed, or it's the last thing that they can think of. But actually, in my experience, it's been the first thing you need to think of to rebuild your self-esteem and a sense of possibility. So, I moved into that, and then not long after, in the company I got shingles. Just working in that environment, it was still very negative. Mm. They wouldn't let me work one-on-one with people, so I ended up working with a career coach for myself, and funded by the company. And I remember thinking, that's exactly, I want to be that person. I want to be, you've seen the cover of the book, right, Sherry? What's on the cover?
Yes.
Maybe you can describe it for people.
It's a bird in a cage. Or,
yeah,
and he's flying out.
Mm-hmm.
No. He's escaping.
Yeah. And many people can identify. The career coach got me to draw a picture. She was really creative and holistic and spiritual, and she got me to draw a picture, and I drew a bird, and the bird was in the cage, and she was a black, sort of grey, lifeless bird, and she was stuck in the cage, and the door was open, and she got me to write words, and I wrote, she can't fly. And my career coach burst into tears. And I felt like that, and I know many people feel like that they can't fly. They can't get out of that situation or that cage. And working with people like you and I, or whether it's through self-empowerment books, just working with people that can remind us we still have those wings. You know, we still have the ability to change. We've just become so demoralized by our situation that we've just about remembering, awakening our hearts again and our tenacity and making steps. So kind of the story, but it's a lot longer than that. But
right. Well, you know, what you're talking about, I mean, I've heard you say that you believe in magic and that you believe in the power of joy and love and creativity to transform people's lives. And that's not something that a lot of people say when they're talking about their jobs, if they work in corporate America or even corporate wherever. Can you expand on that concept of the power of magic and joy? And what does that mean?
Well, it's, you know, whether you call it, I discovered a passion for passion. And if you look at that word, you know, what does passion mean? It's a bit like love. How do you define love? How do you define joy? But it's actually a feeling, isn't it? You know, it's a higher vibration in your body. It's an effervescent feeling. It is a magical feeling. It's uplifting. It's life. It's full of possibility. And this is the thing that is transformative, because when I help people, when I discovered my passion, which came from that experience of being bullied, of working in an environment where people were demoralized, that made me sick with shingles, that made other people have heart attacks, when I got angry enough to want to make a positive change, I was unstoppable. Suddenly, I think when you move into your joy zone or your passion zone, you're kind of that little limiting ego self that disappears. You're suddenly like a majestic eagle. You're like unstoppable, and that in my experience, and also working like return to work mums or dads or people who perhaps maybe they were a teacher and think all they can do is teach in school again, and they've lost that kind of sense of what else they could do. To do anything, you need to tap into your desire, and then you're also matched with kind of starting to look out and see who else is working in this way, who else is following their passion and still paying the bills. You know, who's, so So for me, I at that time, I felt hopeless still. I felt passionate, but I felt hopeless. Like, where would I find a good job? And then I started thinking, well, who is out there that I admire? What are the companies that are values-driven? What are the ones that really, truly care about people more than profit? And then I went door-knocking, cold-calling. And, you know, the interesting thing, Sherry, is that that job wasn't advertised. Just as the joy, the passion, it's kind of flow. When passions collide, expect to be hired. I knocked on the door. I just went for a chat. We call it informational interviewing, just a little chin wag here and there, nothing, you know, stressy, not asking for a job. I just wanted to see, were they really, was it a nice place to work? And we just, like when you and I connected, we just got on so well that they actually ended up creating a job just for me.
Wow. So the concept of going on an informational interview could parlay itself into something bigger, better, more.
Yeah, especially when you combine it with sort of, you know, manifestation or, you know, we call it magic, but I just think it's actually, it's just about alignment. So I had Harvard Business School calls it job sculpting, where you become like an artist. You sculpt your ideal job. You think about, it could even be like photography, listing all the things you hate about your current job or your former job. Then being constructive and saying, well, how could you take a negative and make it a positive? So, for instance, I wanted something with more that, where they truly cared about people. And so I took the negative of they didn't care about people, they cared more about profit, and I turned it into that positive. And then when I lifted all these things, Greenfield's role, I wanted to create something that helped people look at their interests and passions and enthusiasms. All this kind of like, you might think it's like a wish list. And it was my wish list. And then lo and behold, every single thing on my wish list, the stuff, and I'm talking about the stuff that really matters, because I was offered other jobs and they paid $40,000 and more above what this particular company paid. But when I looked at what was really important to me, the money was lower down in the hierarchy than other things. I was a single parent. I wanted, you know, I never forget when I went there and everybody left at 5 o'clock and no one worked weekends. And I was almost traumatized thinking I was going to get told off or sanctioned when, you know, if I left at five. And in my former company, people were expected to be there at weekends, so expected to be there late at night. So But that was on my wish list. I wanted a job where I could be home for my daughter. So, yeah, I mean, it worked for me and it's worked for my clients and it can work for anyone else listening. It's not necessarily going to happen overnight, but it will happen. I firmly believe that.
Right. Tell me, what do you mean when you say failure is not fatal?
Fatal. Well, when is it ever really fatal? When you think about it, if you're making, I'm not a big person for just quitting with nothing to go to. That's not my experience. You know, I've been a single parent. I've had a mortgage. I didn't have the luxury, I would say, of just quitting and hoping it would work out. I think sometimes it can be sort of fatal, but it's not really fatal. If you haven't planned, if you don't have your safety harness on, you know, that kind of thing. But everything is a learning experience. It's an opportunity to learn, you know, what didn't work, what did work, what could you change. And look at people like Leonardo da Vinci. If he sort of thought the first time he failed at something was fatal and he was going to give up, we wouldn't still be talking about him. Coco Chanel is the same. You know, many of the people, when you look at successful people, they'll always credit and thank and have great gratitude for their failures. I think a lot of people don't allow themselves to consider the possibility that they might not get it right this time.
You know, you mentioned Leonardo da Vinci and Coco Chanel, and when I discovered that you had written books on each of them, I was fascinated because it's, will you just, I would not do it any justice. Will you please describe for our listeners what your thinking was and just a little bit about those two books and why you picked them?
Well, Leonardo, I'm working on a historical novel on, I've been working on it for a while now, inspired by Mona Lisa and the portrait. And I, you know, I think many people don't realize how much people like Leonardo da Vinci and also Coco Chanel, that, you know, you look at successful people and you think, gosh, they had it easy. They had it really hard. You know, they were outsiders. They had a lot of people who were jealous. People made up stories. They were lucky to get away with their life. They were accused of all sorts of things. Things didn't work out. They had money issues. You know, because I'm also an artist, I know that many artists, you know, the kind of the struggle. The struggle was always present, but they don't let it sort of become a negative. It's just part of their creative journey. And so looking at people like Leonardo da Vinci and thinking, well, okay, what could he teach me? But how did he do it? You know, what could he teach me and what could he teach all of us? So what I'll do with, it, say, a book like this is I'll just turn at random, like for now, I'll say, what's my lesson today? And I'll turn to a page, and here I go, principle 6. So keep your body healthy. And this is one of the things that people don't realize part of the job search is, you know, you've got to really look after your body, you know, lose the booze, and fueling up is really helpful too. Just get out there. All the things that probably stress you don't feel like doing. And so I wrote this to be realistic guide to success, not just, you know, common emotions of success, but and also sacrificing your relationships for success, or not hanging on to a relationship if it's impeding your success. So both these people just inspire me because they're just such beautiful people.
I love it. You know, you in the book about Coco Chanel, you had headings that for book headings, and they were. I'm just going to read a couple of them. Perfume your life, stay sparkly, and dress joyfully. So that kind of tips the listeners off of what that book is going to be a little bit like. What's your intent with that, with giving that sort of advice?
For example, perfume your life. You know, you look at obviously Coco Chanel number 5 perfume, but it's really the cornerstone of her success. But people don't realise that the plants, the essence, the essential oils are a big part of that, the potency of nature to uplift us. We don't have to necessarily have, you know, years and years of therapy or a top pill or something to feel uplifted. It is the actual, the essence of flowers. And I remember going along, not that that's everything, and then there are times people need extra help, so I don't want to dismiss that, but I remember going, having a client, and she was really stressed, and I had some lavender oil in my bag, and I sort of brought it out, and I said, you know, this can be really, and the research is there, the neurological research is there about how essential oils impact the brain. And I said, this is really, we all know lavender's calming. And she looked at me and she said, don't you dare bring that snake oil in here.
Oh, no.
And I thought, holy smoke. And she was a doctor. And I don't know, people seem to link, you know, flowers with being a witch, witchcraft. So, you know, I wanted to remind people that, yeah, look, I worked for Coco and she made zillions, and it helped her through a period of grief. Many of the flowers she chose for Chanel number 5 were, it was created following the death of her, the only man she said she ever loved. It was very healing for her, and I love it. So, yeah, people have got funny, you know, they've got funny notions about things, don't they, sometimes?
Oh, absolutely. Heck, yes. And I didn't know that Chanel number 5 is such a classic. So that's a lovely thing to know. Thank you so much. You know, it's not very often that we get to hear from an author, especially somebody that writes about some self-help books. it's not often that we get to ask the question, and this is one I'm going to ask you to give us advice. How can we get the very most out of your books? What can we do so that we get you? You've alluded to one thing, and one thing which I love. I actually wrote it down because I'm going to do it. To open up the book to any page to see what message you're supposed to receive that day. That's beautiful advice. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you would tell us?
Well, I guess it is. It's sort of I was reading the Dalai Lama and is it Archbishop Desmond Tutu. They've written a book together about joy or finding joy, which is a beautiful book. And one of the practices they say to find more joy is to begin your morning. So they're talking about joy even when everything's crap. They're talking about how to find joy even when, you know, in the Buddhist worldview is very much around, you know, life is suffering. It's how we handle the suffering. They're not saying life is automatically beautiful. And they're saying that it's how we handle it. And so we can fortify ourselves by reading a spiritual book, an uplifting book, poetry even every morning, and then at the end of the day, or maybe also at lunchtime, much like you know, religious spiritual people will sort of graze their spiritual texts quite regularly. And I think very often people forget to do that, so they whack on the news, they read the calamity in the newspaper, or all the lies, or whatever, whoever's manipulating the media at the moment, or it's all depressing and yucky. So people like Julia Cameron, who wrote The Artist's Way, she stands that kind of toxic reading, and find some, you know, create a bit of magic. Read, so, you know, in my books it might be you just flick at random on Kindle, or if you have got a printout like I do every day, I ask Leonardo, you know, what's my focus for today? Much like Coco Chanel used oracles or tarot cards. For some people, again, they'll think it's like witchcraft. But there's Carl Jung, the psychologist, you know, he's a believer in the power of the oracles. Oracles is this little portent of wisdom. So there's nothing, you know, sort of sinister about that. You just open a page, and very much it's about intuitive guidance. And I've never found, and I use this in my sessions as well, I'll get them to pick a page at random and I'll speak to you. And if it doesn't, fine, you know. But it's just amazing. I met Richard Bowles, right, who wrote Book Colour Ritual Parachute, and he said sometimes it's just one line. Just one line in a book can radically change someone's life.
Yeah, I believe that to be true, and I bet some of our listeners have had that experience where someone will say one thing at a particular time that sticks with you and reframes your perspective about something, or redefines your view, and it's truly magical. The thing of it is, if you go looking for it, you'll never find it. You just have to be open to it and let it come to you. Yeah,
which is why
I have
love
found
quotes.
That.
Mm-hmm.
Me too. Yeah,
you found that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed. Do you have a quote that you like? Is there one either hanging in your office, or one that you live by, or one that you use as guidance?
Well, there's one I came across the other day. I was doing a screenwriting class with Aaron Sorkin. He did a big political drama, West Wing, and things like that. There's a quote that he sort of shared in one of the course books, and it says, "Go ahead and take chances, because that's the only way you're actually going to find out where your sweet spot is."
Would you say it again? Take chances. That's the only way.
It's the only way you're actually going to find out where your sweet spot is.
Wow, beautiful. Yeah, I love that.
Just make sure you try. Just experiment. But what if you fail? Just go out and try a few things.
Yeah. Speaking of chances, some of us that are listening are of a certain age, let's just say, and recruiters and employers, some of them have been accused of being ageist. Do you think it's true, and is that a barrier that could be worked around?
Yes, it is true. I've been a recruiter, so I know it's true. I also know they can be very biased towards people's ethnicity or religious beliefs and all sorts of things if it doesn't match their own worldview or what they perceive their employer looks for. So, yes, that can. That's why going through recruiters is only one part of the job search activity. Like my one was going straight to the employer or networking, etc., using contacts, asking people, who do you know who works with so-and-so, and I wonder if I could just have a chat with them. All those sorts of things. And then look again at people. In one of my books, Midlife Career Rescue, I talk about a woman who came back in her late 50s, 60s, and she had to learn how to market her age and her skill set appropriately. She had to work a bit more creatively about how to package her skill set. And it's not lying, it's just making sure that you're not sort of putting out biases, like putting your age already on your CV and things like that. And she found work. It's out there. It's just that I don't think you're as likely to find it through a recruitment consultant.
Got it. Yeah, that's good advice.
I was just going to say just briefly. The other thing is you've got to value your assets, your age. You have to believe yourself. Many people buy into. They're already sort of projecting this kind of defeatist. I'm too old. I'm 60. No one's going to employ me. You've got to know. Well, what's cool about you? Your loyalty, the fact that you've demonstrated that you learn, your resilience, the fact that you're not sort of some kid who's just going to, or someone who's going to, I don't know, go off and get married and leave a career behind and whatever. You have to know how to sell the value of what you bring. That's really important.
That's a good point. Yeah, the older crowd is less likely to come into work late because they stayed out too long the night before.
Yeah.
Or some of,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Some of the different behaviors.
And look at the role models. Look at people who are in their 60s and are making changes in their career, either because they go off and work, you know, for another employer, or because they finally have to get up and go to start their own independent, sort of whether it's a solopreneur business on their own, or they line up with other people, or they go independent, or they do what I call a career combo, where it's a little bit of part-time work here. Like one of my ladies, 65, started her own business. She does 2 days in a clothes-making store to just, you know, have a little bit of regular cash, and she's busy with a business called Your Clutter Coach, you know, following her passion for getting rid of clutter. You can have it doesn't have to be one thing.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of one thing, you are not one-dimensional yourself personally. You have side passions as well. I've noticed that your side passions are creative expression sorts of things, like painting and photography. Have those always been a part of your life, or was that something that you developed as you became older?
I think that's a lovely thing to have noted, actually, because sometimes you don't realize what these themes are, and the fact that they often began right back in childhood. And as a friend of mine who wrote in one of my books, Max Gimlet, who's an artist based in New York, he's one of the first New Zealanders to exhibit at the Guggenheim, and he's a Zen Buddhist monk. He said midlife is the crucial point in the life cycle. And he's saying that, you know, persevere with your midlife. Bring into consciousness your childhood dreams as they will become your living reality. I love that because as a child I used to paint, I used to draw, I used to do cartoons, I illustrated the school journal and, you know, all those kind. And I actually forgot that I was creative for many, many years, probably not until my late 40s.
Wow. And then you reconnected with it.
Yeah, and it's nice being a child again.
it's a role you wear well and beautifully.
I'm so childish. Yeah, it's great being childish. And that's the other thing about being, you could say, a certain age. Yes, we can be childish if we wish to, because increasingly we don't really care. You know, don't really care what, and I love that about Coco Chanel. She said, I don't care. I don't think about you at all. I don't care what you think. I don't think about you at all. You know, like, don't care. The people that get you will get you, and the people that don't, well, they can go find a new best friend.
Exactly, and that, and when we were talking about the ageism and the older employee, that's another case too. They don't need to be popular. I think I don't know when it is in your life, but you cross a line where you really just don't give a rip anymore. So it's a nice line to cross.
Yeah, it is. Because it's really, you know, you can just be.
Yeah, you can sense it in others too. I hate this because I'm so enjoying this conversation, but we are just about out of time. But before we go, there is something that you are going to offer to our listeners, and I would love if you would share with us what that is.
Well, I guess I encourage people, and I think you're going to put the links, actually, under the broadcast, but to one of the things that I would love people to do is pick up a copy of my passion, How to Manifest Your Passions, and it's got all sorts of activities in it, including how to, you know, create a passion journal. Do you call it a vision board, your one, Sherry?
Yes.
Yeah.
Same concept.
But a lot of what I did was to journal, scrapbook, paste pictures. I even manifested my partner that way, you know, through actually visual, colour and visual. And so the same three gifts that I'm going to leave people, it has a whole lot of practice, because many people say, well, it's great if you know what you're passionate about, but I don't know what I'm passionate about. So there's some structured exercises to help people to, find that passion and then think about ways to secure it.
Oh, lovely. Thank you. That is something people do need to connect with, so that they can find the things that bring them joy, just like we've been talking about today. So thank you for that. And if someone wanted to learn more about you, where would you suggest that they go to do that?
One of the best places, I'm all over the place, really. But I've got a couple up on my business, Workplace Solutions, where I train people to be career and life coaches, and I do a lot of corporate coaching. So that's one side of me, and it's got links to books, etc., and free tips and inspirational tips. And then my other creative, holistic, spiritual side, well, they're all entwined, but CassandraGaveSports.com. So you'll find stuff there too.
Great. And we'll put those links out so that people can just click on those. Wonderful. Well, thank you for joining us today. This has been indeed a pleasure.
Thank you so much for reaching out and connecting with me, and I thank to all your listeners who are tapping in. This is, again, evidence of the power of passion. You know, we haven't met before, but through that shared passion to help people live their best life, we've connected, and here I am in the Bay of Islands, and there you are about to go on your road trip to Jamaica, Idaho.
Indeed. Oh, indeed. And it's going to be it's a fun road trip. Well, thank you. Thanks for being here. And no, you don't. You really. Well, maybe you do, because you're on the other half of the world. We're entering springtime, and you are just leaving the nice weather. So we'll have to figure out how we can swap places sometime. So thank you, listeners. Thanks for being with us. That's our segment for today. We appreciate you joining the two of us, and please be sure to watch for more from me, Sherry Clark, and Fork in the Road, and we will plan to see you soon. Thank you ever so much.